From Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall, and we're talking about the 94th Assembly District today in our election coverage, and that race is between Representative Steve Doyle, the incumbent. He's a Democrat on the ballot. The Republican is Kevin Hoyer, and an independent candidate, Leroy Brown II, is also on the ballot in the 94th Assembly coming up on November 3rd. Joining us now is Representative Steve Doyle. Representative Doyle, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for the invitation.
Voters are pretty familiar with you now. You've been in office since 2011. You've also done work on the county level. But tell us a little bit about you for people who might not be as familiar. Talk about your qualifications, your family, anything else biographically that you think people should know.
Sure. So I am a product of La Crosse County, born and raised here. Grew up on the north side of La Crosse, moved to Onalaska when I was in fifth grade, and have lived in the Onalaska area ever since. I have gone through our school system here. My parents sent me through the Catholic school system, so St. James, St. John's, St. Pat's, and then Aquinas. Went to college at UW-La Crosse and then law school at UW-Madison. The only time that I haven't lived in La Crosse area is when I was in school. Otherwise, I've been here all the time. Married to Gloria Doyle, and we have two daughters, Caitlin and Stephanie. They have also gone through our school system, and we are a four Badger family. All of us have degrees of some sort or another from University of Wisconsin-Madison. Before I got elected to the state assembly, I was on the county board first as an individual supervisor, but then for almost a decade as the county board chair. When I was county board chair, the term that we always talked about was collaboration. You know, can we work with the towns, villages, cities? Can we work with other counties? Can we work with the private sector to get things done? And I'm real proud of the fact that we really kind of created almost a template for doing that. We created the Household Hazardous Materials Program with our various municipalities in the district. I got a phone call one day from Carl Brickle from Brickle Brothers and Select Trusses saying, you know, we really like being in La Crosse County. We really like being in West Salem. We're outgrowing our space here, and I'd hate for us to have to move. Is there anything that you can do to help us? So we pulled together a bunch of people, including La Crosse Area Development Corporation, CenturyLink, Xcel Energy, Village of West Salem, other private entities. We created the West Salem Business Park, which today has over 300 people working in that business park. It is a perfect example of how government can do good things by bringing people together. So what I did was I took that way of thinking, the cooperation, the collaboration, packed that up, went to Madison, serving in the state assembly, and in Madison we call it bipartisanship.
Political philosophy aside, there are obviously real issues that you have to address that impact real people here at home. So talk about what the top two or three or so issues are that you want to address in an upcoming a term.
So I've, over the last couple of sessions, focused on issues like suicide prevention, foster care and helping kids in the child welfare system, you know, abused and neglected kids, and making the adoption process work more smoothly for people. Those are issues that I was able to, you know, be a leader on those committees, bring people together, bring forward ideas that help real people, help kids, help people that are contemplating suicide, you know, help people that don't feel that, you know, anybody's looking out for them. And, you know, I always like to say, you know, abused and neglected kids or people thinking about suicide aren't Democrats or Republicans. They're people in need. And there shouldn't be Democratic or Republican responses to those. They should be human responses to those. So I'm real proud of the fact that we've been able to accomplish a lot in those areas. And most of our bills that we've brought through those committees have passed the legislature unanimously. And, you know, that's something that you don't see a lot of. But when you put forward common sense ideas that both sides have had a role in creating, then those are things that, you know, yeah, they're going to pass unanimously. And people are going to say, well, you know, that makes sense. Let's do that. So those are issues I want to keep working on. Then, you know, the big issues that we always talk about, you know, education, healthcare, transportation, are certainly things that need to be a priority. Healthcare, obviously, with the current pandemic, is front and center. You know, what can we do to make, you know, A, our state safer, and B, people being able to afford to have that healthcare coverage that that they so desperately need. You know, one of the things in that area, of course, has been, you know, Wisconsin is one of what is now getting to be fewer and fewer states willing to accept the federal Medicaid money. You know, that's money that we send off to Washington. They divvy it out and send it back to other states. They're happy to send, you know, a couple $1 billion back to us. In fact, already at this point, they would have. And, you know, the legislature has consistently said, no, we don't want that money. That makes no sense to me. It's our money. We could increase the number of people covered by health insurance if we would simply say, yeah, we'll take that money. If we ever decide that we don't want to, you know, continue in that program, we're able to get out at any point. I mean, so there's really not a downside to doing that. And I just, you know, I tend not to be critical of either party, but that's one issue where I just don't understand the Republican thought process on that in Wisconsin, because we have Republican governors from numerous states that have said, gee, that's our money. Let's take it back. And they have, you know, they've gone into the program. And in Wisconsin, it would be simply a matter of expanding BadgerCare. So, you know, healthcare is an issue that people feel very strongly on. We're going to be focusing a lot on that. It's a top priority of mine. Education. For 22 years before I got elected to the state assembly, I taught at University of Wisconsin La Crosse in the political science department. Education is important to me. I have family members who are teachers. A very important issue for, you know, for me, and you know, having my wife and I raised two kids, we see the value of education and what that can mean for your future. So we need to do a better job in Wisconsin of adequately funding our public schools. We need to do a better job of making sure that it's a level playing field so that, you know, your zip code doesn't determine the quality of your education. We need to respect our teachers. I think that was one of the really bad byproducts of the Act 10 debate is some people felt that, you know, teachers weren't earning the pay that they were receiving. I can tell you from personal experience that they more than earn the money that they're receiving for doing the teaching. So that's another issue that's, you know, been important to me, will continue to be important to me. And finally, then transportation. You know, coming out of local government, I know that our roads need improvement. The state has historically been shorting us in terms of the funding for transportation. Talked to a lot of my local businesses, whether it's, you know, Reinhardt Foods or Quick Trip or Festival, where they're telling me, you know, we are so dependent on having good quality roads. Our equipment, our trucks are being ruined by the quality of our roads. You know, do what you can to help. And I think we need to pay better attention to that.
COVID-19 has a lot of people concerned with economic recovery, and people such as farmers were not having that great a couple of years before that. So it's been hard for a lot of people in Wisconsin. In your particular district, in the 94th Assembly, Representative Doyle, how would you assess the economic status of your district?
Thanks for that question, Ezra. When I look around my district, I see a couple categories. There's a category of folks that are doing okay, and there's a category that aren't doing so well. The people who are doing okay are ones that, you know, have employers that have been able to make accommodations to keep them working, keep the, you know, the paychecks coming and so forth. The people that are in the category that are hurting right now are people that work for small businesses or are self-employed, people who own or run restaurants, businesses that are, you know, directly affected by whether they can be operating or not. So the people that are hurting right now, we've been trying to be proactive. My office, for example, has been fielding questions and requests from actually at this point over 150 people who had difficulty getting their unemployment compensation checks, or they need help with their small business loans and so forth. I look at that as a real key part of my job, is not just going to Madison and voting on things, but to help people who are in need. And these are people who have been waiting in many cases for weeks, sometimes even months, to get their unemployment check. That not only hurts them, but obviously it hurts our economy if they're not able to pay their rent or their mortgage or their car payment, if they're not able to spend money, you know, at those restaurants or the retail stores and so forth. So, you know, the pandemic has certainly had a significant impact on us. When we were at a little bit earlier stage in the pandemic, I put forward on Facebook my proposal on how we could reopen our economy in Western Wisconsin. We got really good feedback from people on that, saying, you know, thanks for being proactive. Thanks for putting something out there so that we can actually talk about a plan rather than just kind of stumbling forward. And I think that's what's really needed at this point. I know the governor has asked the Republicans to call us back into session to put forward that plan. You know, it doesn't help if one side says, here's our plan, and the other side says, that's stupid, we're not going to do that. And it doesn't matter which side is which in those cases. We really need to, from my perspective, lock people in a room and make them talk about these things so that we can come up with some consensus and move forward to dealing with, you know, really an almost unheard of kind of economic calamity that we've had in our state and across our country. So, you know, looking here locally, some of us are hurting really bad, some of us are hurting kind of bad, but nobody's really, you know, thriving in this particular economy.
There's been a sharp focus, and rightly so, recently on the disparity between the lives of many white Americans and the lives of far too many Americans of color. How will you work to make sure that more minority voices have a seat at the table in decision-making processes and in the lawmaking process?
You know, the latest things that we've seen on TV with regard to law enforcement interaction with members of the minority population. I've historically been involved in that from the criminal justice standpoint. As a member of the Criminal Justice Management Council in La Crosse when I was the county board chair here, where we talked about the issues of disproportionate sentencing and disproportionate numbers of people being, you know, arrested, and what we could do about that and try to be proactive and have those community debates. Lately, what I've been trying to do is to have one-on-one meetings with members of law enforcement so that I can get their perspective and their suggestions on, you know, what they see in the street that we could do better. So I think that's an important thing from the criminal justice standpoint. But the other issue, of course, is economic opportunities. You know, we simply don't provide the same kind of economic opportunity for minorities that people like myself, middle-aged white guy, you know, I've had a lot of opportunity in my history that, other people of different races have not had. And I think that we need to be more sensitive to that, you know, whether it is, various types of incentives and financial assistance for minority-owned businesses, for hiring of minorities and so forth. You know, I think that what we're seeing across the country is an eye-opening. You know, we've talked about before, that hasn't really ever taken off. And I think that now we're starting to get folks that are saying, you know, maybe I've been living in a shell and haven't realized, you know, what people of different races or nationalities have dealt with. And maybe we do need to do things differently.
We've got a couple minutes left, and I want to make sure that I give you an opportunity to express in your own words why you think people should vote for you. So to those voters who are looking ahead to that November 11th election between Steve Doyle and Kevin Hoyer and Leroy Brown II, why should voters choose the incumbent Democrat, Steve Doyle?
Well, I have not just talked about things. I've made promises, and I've kept those promises. So, for example, I have said that, I would act in a bipartisan manner. As I mentioned earlier, the State Legislative Reference Bureau has proven that, looking at the numbers. I try to co-sponsor an equal number of Democratic and Republican bills every session. I am the go-to guy for people in the Republican Party who are looking for a Democratic co-author of bills that they introduce. So I don't just talk about it, I do it. but I also focus on what I can do to help people in my district and to highlight my district. So, for example, every school year, I send out honor roll letters to students, and it's usually about 1,800 of those a semester where, you know, if a student works hard enough to get on the honor roll, they should deserve some recognition. It shouldn't just be that we find bad things to say about kids or, you know, when they're getting in trouble. We should recognize when they're doing good things. And I've been really proud to do that. And I get really good feedback from people saying that, you know, thanks for recognizing my kid. So, you know, there are things that I do in Madison as a legislator, but there are also things that I do in my district as a member of the community and recognizing that, you know, the value of my individual constituents. So, my argument for why I should be reelected is very simple. I will keep doing what I've been doing. And if you like what I've been doing, then you're not going to be surprised by what you see from the future.
We've been speaking with Representative Steve Doyle. He is the Democrat running for re-election in the 94th Assembly District. He faces the Republican candidate, Kevin Hoyer, and an independent candidate, Leroy Brown II, in the election on November 11th. Representative Doyle, thanks very much for joining us on Newsmakers today.
Thank you, Ezra.
And this is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to hear a part of this show that you might have missed, or if you'd like to check out our previous election coverage or stream on demand any of our previous shows, you can do so at our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. If you want to take our show on the go, open that podcast app that you use, search for Newsmakers, and hit subscribe. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest studio. Thank you very much for listening today. It's our show about the 94th State Assembly race, and that is in La Crosse County, the portions of La Crosse County, not including the city of La Crosse. So we're talking about Onalaska, Holman, West Salem, Bangor, Mindoro. There's actually three candidates running in this race. The incumbent is Representative Steve Doyle. He's a Democrat. The Republican candidate, who we're speaking to in just a moment, is Kevin Hoyer, and the independent candidate is Leroy Brown II, and we'll hear from him later in today's program. Mr. Hoyer, thank you very much for joining us today on Newsmakers.
Well, thank you very much, Ezra. I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk with you, and really excited about having the opportunity to represent the constituents here in the 94th District.
Let me just start by asking you, since campaigning is a little bit different right now, and people haven't had as many opportunities to visit groups of people and go door-to-door and all those kinds of things, a lot of people might not be familiar with you. So why don't you start by just introducing yourself to our audience about anything about your work, your family, your qualifications, or other things that people think might be interesting about you.
I'm a native of West Salem, grew up there, spent the majority of my life there, save about 2 years on a family farm just outside of town. And currently I still farm with my wife, where we raise grain crops along with some pasture ground and woodland. During that time period, I also served 9 years representing rural interests for Wisconsin, and also on throughout the nation on an organization called the American Soybean Association. And we dealt with policy issues that not only involved the farm bill, but environmental issues, sustainability issues, food security, food quality, infrastructure, rural economy that affects all of us here, as well as trade issues, both domestic and foreign. And we did that purely on a nonpartisan basis, that we took the needs, the desires, the wants of our membership and move them forward through Congress, again, nonpartisanly, to try to influence some sound policy that affects all of us. After serving those 9 years, I came home and wanted to use my skills and leadership, and am now currently representing the town of Hamilton as a supervisor, and also La Crosse County as a supervisor, and am very excited to be able to extend those those ties with the community and do the same thing running for assembly.
So you talked about agriculture and your advocacy there. I'm assuming that'll be one of the big issues that you would like to address, but I certainly don't want to put words in your mouth. So what are the issues that are in your top two or three priorities to address, assuming you eventually take that office?
One of the bigger issues that we've dealt with on the county has been some environmental issues such as water quality, which has been a challenge in the northern part of the county. And I certainly, as an agriculturist and as a farmer, very keen on what the what a clean environment means to us, and want to be able to tie that in not only from a rural aspect, but also the suburban and urban aspect as well. That I understand environmental issues and how it affects us in our daily needs. So that is one of the key issues I like to start working on. The other one is making sure we have the choices that we all have currently to be able to protect ourselves, to make the health care choices we need to have, the educational choices we need to have, and not take any choices away or box us in any category that we feel that kind of take away our freedoms, you know, protect our constitutional freedoms along the way as well.
So in terms of the environment, that's often perceived to be, maybe incorrectly, but that's often perceived to be a very Democratic issue. As a Republican, how do you approach the issue of the environment differently than maybe a Democratic candidate would?
Well, the environment affects all of us. It doesn't matter your party line at all. And it's unfortunate that a lot of times there's stereotypical definitions given to depending on what party you're in. But it comes right down to it. We all breathe the same air, all drink the same water, eat the same food, and it's highly important to all of us. And my years on the American Soybean Association board, I also sat on a sustainability committee for 3 years, and those were deep issues that we looked at to be able to improve water quality, improve our air quality, keep our soils, keep our conservation practices in place, not only in the agricultural world, but also in the urban and suburban world where that is quickly overtaking some of the agricultural interests in the county. And it's important that everyone has a role in this, every stakeholder has a voice, and we understand the implications that may affect us down the road.
You know, an issue on a lot of people's minds is health care. I mean, even for people with relatively good insurance, it still can be very expensive if you have an underlying health condition or needs in that regard. Wisconsin has not expanded Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, yet it remains a state where people can go bankrupt because of health care expenses, and a lot of people have a lot of needs in that regard. Would you favor the state expanding Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act?
What I favor is our state keeping choices open to people on the types of medical services that they need for their family. Going bankrupt because of medical services should not happen to anybody, and there's a lot of underlying factors there that we need to explore. Why are health costs so high? Why is the United States one of the highest health cost countries in the world when we also are one of the highest countries in the world that put public funding into health care? So just because we give everybody a health care or a single payer does not mean that we're really addressing the problem. The problem is high costs. And to me, the high costs come from underpayment of some of the procedures that are happening from those that are on a single payer or on a publicly funded healthcare system. And when that happens, our health systems have to recoup that money somehow so they can stay in business. And unfortunately, that gets put upon the shoulders of those who are either taking a private insurance or an insurance policy through their employer. And that puts a huge strain on the whole market. I think if we have more competition for our healthcare dollar and our health professionals are also given the opportunities to improve their services on a competitive basis, we're going to have a much better product at a better price and still keep the choices there. Wisconsin is one of the leaders in the country in healthcare, and we are blessed to have such health care providers as Mayo Clinic and Gunderson Health Systems right in our back door. And we need to help protect them, because if we lose those, I'm afraid our health care will even go higher and the quality of health care will go down.
You talked about the nonpartisan nature of your work with the Soybean Council and how you were able to accomplish the goals of your organization on behalf of your members by reaching out to Democrats and Republicans. How do you think those experiences and that bipartisan sort of skill set would affect the way you do business if you're sent to Madison?
Well, that's been my whole life, nonpartisan, starting back when I was part of the American Soybean Association, even in my current roles as a county supervisor and town supervisor. It's completely nonpartisan. And that's the way it needs to be. We need to concentrate on the wants, the needs of the people, the businesses within the district. Not what a party wants, not what a particular group of people want, but what is right for our society, what is right for the community, what moves that total sustainability needle down the road. All too often you hear about partisan bickering, and that's one of the reasons I chose to run. Was I was basically sick and tired of one side pointing at the other side, saying it's your fault. When you actually look back at the context of the whole thing, it got down to more of a pride issue, and I'm ready to change that. I'm ready to bring nonpartisanship into this picture, where I can stand and talk with anybody in my district, understand their wants, their needs, find anybody else who has that same wants and needs, try to build coalitions, bring forward good ideas, good policy to Madison, represent the 94th District to Madison to bring good policy back to the 94th. And all too often, we're told we have to wait till Madison makes a decision. And I like to change that. Grassroots has been my background, and it's time we bring grassroots policy back to government, back to the state government, as well as county and local. So I think my experience as being nonpartisan and grassroots is perfect for the 94th district, and we're ready for that.
I want to ask about because you talked about bringing different voices to the table, and that's a discussion that we've been having in another context in Wisconsin very recently, and especially across the country, which is the voices of minorities who often feel as though they're unheard or at least undervalued in terms of our political discourse. So what could you do as a state representative to make sure that minority voices in the 94th district have a seat at the policy table?
That's an awesome question. That's something that we really need to explore. The minority voices, doesn't matter what race, religion, or background they are, have to have a voice, have to stand up themselves and participate in local governments. I want to make sure everybody has the equal opportunity to enjoy the freedoms that were given to us through the Constitution, and that is very important to me. What I fear is that in some cases we sometimes put one over another to make sure that we try not to miss out on something, but it still comes back to ourselves. Doesn't matter what race, what religion, or what ethnic background you may have, we all need to take responsibility for our actions as well. And to me, that's the most important. We all need to take our responsibilities. We all need to also respect each other and others' views on what's happening. And if we can get by that, keep the family unit together, understand each other socially and respect each other socially. The 94th District and Wisconsin and the rest of the country is going to be much better for that if we can get back to some of those old-fashioned values that we grew up with out here in the country, that we wave to our neighbors going down the road, we take time to stop and talk with them, we understand them, we get together, and we're missing that today. all too often we're in our own little world. We put up our walls and don't pay attention to what our neighbors are up to. And that certainly has gotten us into the positions we're in where we've failed to understand what our neighbors' needs, wants, and ideas are like. And we got to get back to that.
So let me ask you, in our closing minutes, I want to give you the opportunity to kind of lay out in a thumbnail of why people should vote for you. So in a minute or two, why don't you take just a minute or so to talk to voters directly about why they should choose Kevin Hoyer in this campaign?
Well, I'd be honored to do that. What you will find in my candidacy is someone who's had the opportunities over the years to work across different sectors, different lines, bring together coalitions, not only on a very local basis, but on a wide scale, even a national, international basis, to be able to listen to everybody's wants and needs. You know, my work in agriculture and sales over the years has taught me the ability to listen, to find out what your wants and needs are and build upon it and bring a solution. My business is growing, and I like to say that I want to grow a better community. I want to grow better understanding, a better society moving forward. It's also about leadership. Leadership that doesn't have to go out and ask their leader how to vote. Leadership that understands the needs of their constituents and taking their ideas and moving forward. Leadership that stands up to hard times when asked to make that decision. Do I vote for a pay raise or don't I? Example, Lacrosse County had a pay raise for their supervisors come up last fall. And I was part of a small group of supervisors who voted against that, even though there was a strong push from the other supervisors that we needed to have this almost 50% pay raise. I didn't think that was right. To me, serving is just that, serving. It's not about the money. It's not about the notoriety. It's not about the fame. It's about the humility of being a servant for you. And that's what I look forward to doing, is being that servant for you, being your voice, and being ready to get to work and get to work for you. That's what's important to me.
Kevin Hoyer is the Republican candidate for the 94th State Assembly District. Mr. Hoyer, thank you very much for joining us today.
I appreciate it, Ezra.
Absolutely. And the other candidates featured in that race are Representative Steve Doyle, a Democrat. He's the incumbent. And an independent candidate, Leroy Brown, and we'll hear from him next. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Bureau. Thank you very much for tuning in today. It's our program featuring all of the candidates from the 94th State Assembly District. That November 3rd election is coming right up, and joining us earlier today were Representative Steve Doyle, the incumbent, he's a Democrat, and Kevin Hoyer, the Republican challenger. And joining me now is Leroy Brown II, an independent challenger for the 94th Assembly seat. Mr. Brown, thank you very much for joining me today.
And thanks for the invite, Ezra. I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. I'm glad you could make it. And so let's start with just introducing yourself to our audience. Tell people about either your work or your family or anything that you think might set you apart as a candidate for this 94th Assembly seat.
I'm Leroy Brown. I'm from West Salem, Wisconsin. Been on the village board here for 5 years. Helped with June Dairy Days in the community and on the Community Foundation, just trying to keep things up and running there. Being on the board has allowed me to work with members from other communities, with the Shared Ride in Onalaska, also with Holman participating in that, and then on county level committees with dealing with transit and mobility.
So talk about your candidacy. What prompts you to run as an independent? It occurs to me that it's the only race in our local listening area that has a third candidate who's not a Democrat or a Republican. What made you choose to run as an independent?
For me personally, when I started out, I looked at the two parties, trying to find out which one, you know, best aligned with my values. As I've been trying for the last several years, And it just, you know, I'm like, you know, if I'm honest with myself, I'm pretty put out with both of them. And, you know, if I'm going to run this as an honest campaign, an open campaign, then I have to run as an independent. So that's where I came around to that.
So talk about your priorities. It's people might listen to one party or another and say, oh, this guy's a liberal and this guy's a conservative and this whatever. So talk about, as an independent candidate, what are your priorities legislatively when you get to Madison?
To me, priority number one is bringing down the temperature in Madison, I'll say. You know, the kind of working to reduce the back and forth, the more vitriolic expressions that you might see out there, trying to get things back to working peaceably with one another. On the legislative front, how that would work, there is a lot of frustration and strain in society right now. Looking for avenues to reduce that strain. You know, maybe it would be some process needs to be made simpler. Maybe some agencies can be freed up to work more easily together. Just looking for those different avenues to make things easier for the participants. Looking at things, trying to take a user design or user experience perspective, to use the trade terminology that's out there, just trying to make things a little bit more streamlined for everyone.
Looking at how things are going economically, I know COVID-19 has thrown a monkey wrench into both people in terms of health care and also in terms of their economy, as businesses were closed for a while and they've altered the way they do services. What are the biggest economic challenges facing the district, and how do you think the state legislature should move to address those?
Economically, COVID is, you know, it's definitely the elephant in the room. Trying to, at this point, working to restart the economic engine for our district, you know, for the communities, trying to get everyone safely back to work so that they can, you know, provide for their families, and also working to set up the institutional structure that if we end up in this boat again, you know, looking, it's been a while since people have talked about like the superbugs and the sort of threats that are kind of out there, is becoming, you know, like bacteria that become more and more drug resistant. You know, we might find ourselves in a similar situation down the line, looking for ways that we can kind of shore up our defenses and shore up the structure of how we do business, so that if need be, we're ready for this in the future.
Looking at the healthcare aspect of it, not only COVID-19, but otherwise, people struggle with healthcare. It's something that can easily bankrupt you if you fall into the wrong circumstances. Wisconsin has famously or notoriously, depending on how you look at it, not expanded Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. Is that something that you would like to see?
That's definitely something I want to look at, as I personally have had experience with falling in what, you know, was described as the donut hole, where there was a time where I wasn't making enough to qualify for the one type of coverage, and I was making too much to qualify for the state benefit, and just working. You know, that's not a happy place to be. And just working to, if the Medicaid expansion eliminates that and does so in a way, I remember when it was first being discussed years ago that there was some concern about extra mandates and the state having to pick up the tab eventually. But ultimately, if we can remove that burden and give people peace of mind on health care, I'm definitely in favor of looking that way.
So in terms of the economic movers in the area, obviously, agriculture is huge in Wisconsin, and a big part of what goes on in the 94th district. What would you do as a member of the state assembly to put Wisconsin farmers, particularly Western Wisconsin farmers, in good stead and on the right path economically?
With the situation in agriculture, it's obviously been up and down for the last several years. I know between the Canadian dairy debates and other issues, it's put a real strain on our local farmers. Working in the capital to make sure that, you know, working with our federal partners to make sure we're getting the best deal possible abroad, and then even domestically, making sure that we're on a level playing field, and, you know, letting our farmers, their natural talents and advantage, letting them succeed with that, and working to make sure they have a backstop or like institutional mechanisms that will help, that if, you know, come bad times, there's an insurance fund or something in place, you know, to help them get through, just so, you know, the people who put the food on our tables should never be worried about putting food on their own.
One of the other things that's been a big part of the public conversation has surrounds this idea of equity and diversity in our society, and the importance of making sure that each group of people is represented by someone who is hearing their concerns. What would you do if you're sent to Madison to represent the 94th District? What would you do to make sure that minority voices have a seat at that policy table?
I would definitely reach out to different organizations in the district that that represent the minority voices, be it, you know, the African American, the Hmong community, the Amish community in the county, anyone who feels that they might not be being heard, who has a different perspective. I want to hear that perspective. I believe a lot of our strength as a country comes from different perspectives and seeing, you know, what works best, what we can do with those ideas to push, you know, state models forward. And I think those different voices is how we get there, you know, be it town hall meetings or just regular outreach and open communication, just making sure that no one's ever afraid to, because whatever minority category they fall into, make sure no one's ever afraid to reach out to me.
So speaking of reaching out to people, this has been an interesting year to run a campaign without the availability of large gatherings or, you know, with people being a little bit wary of somebody they might not know coming knocking on their door. What have you been doing to get the word out about your campaign?
Sure. So I've been relying on social media and word of mouth, and it's been a little trickier. Obviously, one of the downfalls of running as an independent, you know, while you're not tied to the platform and towing the party line, you also don't have the same depth of pocket, we'll call it. But just trying to do what I can with what's available to get in touch. When I was going around collecting signatures, that was early on in the outbreak, people were very understanding, you know, that, and they seemed appreciative that I was, when I'd knock on the door and take a step back, let them feel safe at a distance. And yeah, just working with people that way.
So I want to ask you another question about running as an independent, and that's, you know, as our time is sort of drawing to an end here, talk about running as an independent. And some people might be afraid that voting for somebody who's not a Democrat or not a Republican would be, you know, tossing their vote away. I mean, there's a logic that exists among some people, to be fair, that that I'm not only voting for my candidate, I'm voting against the other candidate. And if I don't vote for one person, I am I'm de facto voting for the other guy. So talk about why people should consider your candidacy, and in particular, why they should not be afraid to vote for an independent candidate.
Right. And that has been expressed to me by both sides, which actually makes me feel pretty good that, you know, if it were different and only one party or one side had expressed concern, I'd kind of wonder myself. But with sort of the broad consensus of people that I've spoken to, you know, that there's something that needs to be fixed. As an independent, I feel like I'm not connected. I can work more freely between the two parties. You know, if there comes a situation where the parties are kind of at a standstill, I can act. I would be able to act as that middle voice to be like, hey, you know, you both think this is, you know, this is like make or break for the party, or, you know, there's going to be a primary challenge or whatever might concern candidates, that, no, this is something that you can actually sit down and work on. For people, you know, individually, voting against voting third party or voting against the big two, I understand that is quite a, you know, a lot of concern, especially in these very polarized times. But at the local level is where if you can make a difference there, we can send a message throughout the system that, you know, there's room for both parties to improve, and there are other voices that can get in here. I find it interesting, you know, at the federal level, I think the Senate has you know, one or possibly even two independents technically elected to the to that chamber. But the House level, there's it's all well, wait, no, there's Justin Amash from I believe from Michigan, who is an independent there now. But otherwise, it's all, you know, that's all the two parties. When you look at the diversity of opinion and diversity of experience throughout this country and even throughout the state, that there's not more independents in office is a little disheartening to me. So I'm running. I feel that if come November people decide that I match their values and some and an outside voice is something they'd like to hear, then there's no shame, no dishonor in coming and voting your conscience at the ballot box.
Leroy Brown II is the independent candidate in the race for the 94th State Assembly seat in the Wisconsin Assembly. Mr. Brown, thank you very much for joining us today.
And thanks again for having me, and have a great rest of your day.
Absolutely. And the election is on November the 3rd. Leroy Brown II, as I said, the independent candidate, he will face another challenger, Kevin Hoyer, a Republican candidate, and they will each try to unseat the incumbent, who is Representative Steve Doyle, a Democrat. And we've been happy to hear from all three of those candidates on today's program. If you'd like to check out our previous or any of our future in the coming weeks programs leading up to this election, you can check them out at our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. If you'd like to take our show on the go, open your favorite podcast platform, search for Newsmakers, and hit subscribe. Thanks today to my producer, Dawn Jewell, and our producer, John Davis. And for the rest of the team in La Crosse, thank you very much for joining us. Make sure you join us next time for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.